You hear that? Your dog knows spring is coming sooner than you think. Dog walks, dog parks, playing fetch, all the stuff your dog loves to do with you. But the warmer weather also means that fleas and ticks are coming back. Fleas and ticks are in the grass, in the woods, and even on their dog friends. Fleas are an itchy nuisance, can easily get into your home, furniture, and beds, which can be terrible. Ticks are even worse. They're hard to spot, but can carry disease and get your dog really sick. PetMeds has your furry friend protected with the best products to prevent flea and ticks all year long. PetMeds pharmacists connect directly with your vet to save you time and deliver the best products for your pet. PetMeds offers low prices on all flea and tick meds, including NexGard, Simparica, and more. And PetMeds AutoShip helps you save even more with additional discounts on regular shipments of PetMeds, dog food, and other high-quality supplies. So get ready for all the spring fun now. Visit PetMeds.com and use promo code PODCAST to save 40% on your first auto ship order. That's PetMeds.com and promo code PODCAST.
I just heard that Paco Alonso, the president of CMLL in Mexico City, passed away. I don't know why it hit me so hard, but it did, because he was the first guy that believed in me and made me into a main event star in 1993. He gave me the name Corazon de Leon. I don't know what happened. I don't know how he passed away, but he was pretty young. And I just want to say thanks, Paco, for believing in me, believing in a skid from Canada. And thanks for giving me a chance and always taking care of me. You're one of the best bosses I ever had. Thanks, Paco. Mucho gusto, senor. I love you. Thanks, Paco.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
Okay, so as you just heard, that's what I posted on Instagram a couple nights ago when I found out that Paco Alonso had passed away. And you might be asking, well, who is Paco Alonso and why was Chris crying? And I don't know. It just really hit me hard. You know, guys come and go in the business that you meet, and some have a little bit of impact and some have a lot of impact. And there's some that basically change the course of a career. And Paco was like that for me. Obviously this is Talk is Jericho, and talking about the death of Paco Alonso. And so Paco Alonso was the head of Consejo Mundial de Lucha Libre. Now, what I'm going to talk about over the next, you know, hour or whatever it is, I may get some of the actual details and facts wrong and some of the real trivia and that sort of thing. So if I do get some facts wrong and some info wrong, bear with me. Obviously not doing this to get the facts and figures right on Mexican wrestling, but CMLL used to be EMLL, Empresa de Lucha Libre, or whatever it is. The longest running wrestling company in the world, started, I believe, in the 20s by the Luderoth family, who basically owns all of the arenas, including Arena Mexico, Arena Coliseo, which is in Mexico City, Arena Guadalajara. There's a Coliseo in Guadalajara. There's a Coliseo, I believe, in Acapulco, Merida, Pachuca, you name it. If there's a big town, big city close to Mexico, the Luderoth family owns the arenas. And that's how they've been able to survive for so long in the wrestling business, is that they don't pay any rent for arenas, and they don't have to worry about booking arenas or any of that sort of stuff because they own the arenas. So they're in charge. So basically, if they get two people show up for a match, well, you know, if they do a profit share with the guys, which is how it works in Mexico, if they do a $500 gate, you know, they take their rent for 200, they take their $250 profit and give $250 to the boys, and they all make money. So, and Paco took over, I believe, for his uncle years ago. And when I first went to Mexico, Paco was in charge. And he's basically the guy that made me into a very big star in Mexico as a 22-year-old, you know, I said in the video, skid from Canada, which is basically what I was, because I started wrestling October 2nd, 1990. And I started working kind of in Canada and small independents in Canada, a couple of things in the States. I did one tour of one or two tours of Japan for FMW, but basically, you know, it was kind of floundering and working, but not, you know, working a real slight pace. And this is when I was a 19-year-old kid, 20-year-old kid, 21-year-old kid, and wanted to work every night of the week if I could. Well, that wasn't happening for me in Canada. What happened was I met a guy called Mike Lozansky. He was called Tigre Canadiense in Mexico. He was a guy that lived in Calgary and was one of the first guys I ever met in the wrestling business. Kind of took me under his wing, me, him, and a guy called Brett Como, who ended up being called the Black Dragon. He was Asai's rival. Asai was the Ultimo Dragon, and Como was the Ultimate Dragon in WAR for a short period of time, and then basically became the Black Dragon in Canada afterwards. But Como, Lozansky, and I were kind of the three musketeers when I first started out. Now, Mike's parents were very wealthy, oil family. So Mike didn't really worry about money so much. He just wanted to live his dream of being a wrestler. Was a super nice, friendly guy, got along with everybody. And as a result, everybody liked him. So he had so many opportunities in the wrestling business because people would hire Lozansky, good looking guy, a pretty decent worker for the time, kind of a pseudo high flyer, meaning he did, you know, head scissors and cross bodies off the top and drop kicks and basically what high flyers were in the early 90s before we got to, you know, Fosbury flops and space flying tiger drops and those type of things, you know, 450 moonsaults or whatever you want to say. So I hooked up with Mike, and the bottom line was whenever we went on trips, Mike would pay the expenses of the trans, you know, the car and the gas and the hotels, but we would basically just have to be on Mike's schedule and do whatever Mike wanted us to do. So, which was fine. You know, I always had to drive at night, and I couldn't believe that. I remember our first road trip. I was like, what time are we going to pull over and stop? You know, cause when I used to go on trips with my parents, you would stop as soon as it got dark, 8 or 9 o'clock, you'd pull up to the old Travel Lodge or the Holiday Inn, and you'd go stay overnight and wake up in the morning and continue on. Not like that in wrestling. Cause what happens is when it gets dark and it starts getting late, the young boy has to drive overnight, which was me. I did not realize that until I started riding with Lozansky and did quite a few 10 p.m. to 6 a.m. driving shifts. And believe me, there's nothing worse than being a nighttime driver when that morning dawn hits you, because that's when you realize that you're tired and it's now, you know, time you were supposed to go to bed, and now you're staying up even longer because you're still driving and the sun is coming up. My point in all this is that Mike, like I said, kind of took me under his wing, and we kind of rode the roads together. And then Mike was working in Mexico. He worked quite a bit for UWA, which was Carlos Maynez. Bad News Allen got him in there because Bad News was good friends with Mike and Mike's family. So Mike was working quite a bit over there. He started working in Monterrey, Mexico, kind of a smaller company for an offshoot of CMLL. It was run by a guy called Carlos Elizondo. He wanted Mike to get a tag team partner that was also another good-looking kid. Mike thought of me. And in December of 1992, I went to Monterrey, Mexico, where I was called Lionheart. And Elizondo put me in, let me just say, they're ball huggers is what we used to call them. Think of a Speedo with a little bit longer legs, but super tight. You could tell what religion I was. and Elizondo loved it, which is, you know, fine. It's a great story. I went to Mexico and they were going to decide what my name was going to be, because I wanted to be called Lionheart, because all the guys that I was influenced by at the time all had the name of animals. There was, think about this, there was Chris Benoit was Wild Pegasus. Eddie Guerrero was Black Tiger. You had Too Cold Scorpio. You had Jushin Liger. You had Ultimo Dragon. You know, all these guys seem to be some kind of a animal, a mammal of one way or another. You know, even Super Delphin, that was a good one from Michinoku Pro. I remember one time Dean Malenko told me he was on a card with Super Delphin, and Super Delphin wasn't working that night, and Dean said they left you off the card on porpoise. Boom, 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 psh. Anyways, I went there to Monterrey, and there was a contest to decide my name because I wanted to be called Lionheart. I thought that was a great name, kind of an offshoot. I was from the Hart Brothers Dungeon, the Lionheart. I had long hair like a lion, you know, that sort of a thing. So they, Elizondo decided to do like a contest to see what my name was going to be. And you could, I still have it somewhere. You could cut out this little like order form, like from the newspaper entry form, I guess you'd say. What should, you know, Chris Jericho's wrestling name be here in Mexico? Picture of me in the paper, you know, long hair, you know, muscular guy, hot young baby face, whatever I was. And they gave you three choices where you could be either, I would be either Lionheart, He-Man, or Chris Power. And that was Power spelled P-O-W-R-E. And Elizondo really wanted to call me He-Man. He was super, super convinced that that was the way to go. And I was like, I can't be He-Man. Like, what am I going to do? Walk to the ring with like, a, you know, a sword to slice my opponents in two, behead them for the three count. And plus I already had my heart set on Lionheart, you know, and I was always that kind of a guy that when I had my mind set on something, I wouldn't really listen to what the promoters wanted me to, even though I was a punk kid who knew nothing. The very first match I ever had on the program, it said Cowboy Chris Jericho from Casper, Wyoming, because the promoter wanted to call me a cowboy. And it's like, I hate cowboys. I don't want to be a cowboy. As a matter of fact, I even told Brett Como, he's like, what's wrong? I'm like, they want me to be a cowboy. And they want to call me Cowboy Chris Jericho. He said, well, just tell them you don't want to do it. Don't do it. And I was like, what do you mean don't do it? I have a choice. Like, I have an option. He said, yeah, just don't do it. Can you imagine now if a guy before his first match told the promoter no on a gimmick idea? If the rules were reversed and that was me, I would have made that kid wear a giant Dumb and Dumber cowboy hat and came to the ring on a damn hobby horse with assless chaps like David Lee Roth at the S Festival in 1983. But instead, they didn't make me be a cowboy, but they had already printed out the program. So I was listed as Cowboy Chris Jericho from Casper, Wyoming. So anyways, so those are the three names that I was going to be. It was Lionheart, He-Man, or Chris Power. And they sent me onto this show. It was called Lucha Sabado or something like that, where every Saturday night they did kind of this local cable company version of a wrestling show where the commentators wore masks. And I was like, why are the hosts of the show wearing masks? Are they on the run from the law, or are they going to take on other masked hosts? Little did I know that fast forward, you know, 28 years, I'd be working for a company where the commentator wears a mask at Excalibur and AEW. But at the time, I thought it was really ridiculous. And I sat down at this talk show and they interviewed me, even though I spoke hardly any Spanish and they spoke hardly any English. And there you go. And at the end of the show, they had a news, a piece of paper in an envelope where they had the results. And it was like American Idol, like, in this envelope is the results of his name. And they did it for real. Because I was like, well, just say that Lionheart wins. And Elizondo was like, no, like, you're going to be whatever the fans vote. So they, you know, they open up the letter and he's like, and the winner is Lionheart. And these mariachis start playing and confetti flies through the air. And the new hero of Monterrey was crowned in Lionheart. As the place was getting cleaned up and everyone was walking out, I went over to the piece of paper just to see what the results were. And I read and it was like Lionheart, 67 votes. He-Man, 65 votes. 14 for Chris Power. And I was like, what's worse, the fact that 14 people wanted me to be called Chris Power, or the fact that Lionheart won by 2 votes only, or the fact that only, you know, 147 people voted for this thing? Like, how unover am I? All this is getting to more Paco Alonso stuff, as you can imagine. So I started working in Monterrey, Mexico, and it was kind of like working, let's say, for ECW or a Ring of Honor, where it was a smaller company that had some TV, but not huge TV, but enough that if you were on it and people were watching, you could be seen. What I didn't know is I had a match against Black Magic, who's Norman Smiley, now one of the most critically acclaimed and loved trainers in NXT. I helped him get that job, by the way. And this is the reason why. When I was in Monterrey, it was 1992, I think probably December, maybe. And he was supposed to, Magic was the CMLL world champion at the time. And he was supposed to face Vampiro. Vampiro hurt his leg, or so he said, but he didn't want to do the match. And so Elizondo put me in Vampiro's place. So it was Black Magic versus Lionheart. Before the show, I met Vampiro, who told me if I really want to get over in Mexico, I should wear a loincloth. And I was like, what? He goes, yeah, a loincloth's going to help you get over. One of many great experiences I had with the famous Vampiro. Anyways, so we had this match. And when you do a title match in Mexico at the time, you got double pay. And I think I was getting $500 for the Sunday match because Sundays were really big, even in Monterrey. And it's funny because I think the place was called Plaza Monumental. Plaza Monumental, I think, was the name of the venue. And we just went back there probably about 10 years ago with WWE. And I couldn't believe how small it was. Meanwhile, when I first went there, I couldn't believe how big it was. It was the biggest place I'd ever been. Thousands of people were there. It probably hold, I don't know, 4,000 or 5,000, which, you know, in WWE land, it's a decent sized, you know, small town venue. But when I was working from Monterrey, it felt like the freaking Tokyo Dome. So I worked this match with Magic and I got double pay, which was $1,000 instead of 500. And we had a three fall match. I think it was three falls. Or maybe a championship was just one fall, which I think might have been what it was. But if it was two out of three falls, Magic put me over in one of the falls and then beat me in the other two. Or if it was just one long match, he put me over. He made me look so good. And after the match was done, because he didn't know who I was, he was like, you know, that was really good and thank you. And little did I know that when that match got on TV, somebody saw it and pointed it out to Paco to where he wanted to get this Lionheart up to the big league. So it'd be like getting a call from Vince McMahon to go to WWE if you were in Ring of Honor, or I guess now NXT, but it's kind of, well, maybe it was kind of an NXT thing because it was technically connected somehow. It's like an offshoot, you know, like a outpost version of CMLL. So it'd be like getting the call from NXT if Vince saw your match on TV. So fast forward a couple months, I think it was probably February or so, I was going to go back to Monterey again for another stint. I think the first stint I went with Mike was kind of October, mid-October to mid-December. And then I think we were going to go back from mid-January to mid-March or something like that because they ran all year long. So you could go there and stay there for a year if you wanted to. So I was at home in Calgary, Okotoks, actually, which is outside of Calgary, represent Okotoks. And I was living with a family, the Palcos, and old days, no cell phones then, guys. You got to call someone's house, and whoever's home answers the phone, and hello, is Chris there? Chris, phone, that sort of a thing. So I was at home one day, and the mom, Mrs. Palco, Bev, Chris, phone, I came downstairs, and it was a guy that I had met one time in Monterey. He was a toy maker. He made like, I think he had the merchandising rights to CMML action figures, whatever they were making at the time back in 1993. And he knew Paco. And Paco asked him, do you know this guy, Lionheart? Because back then, maybe a little bit harder to get a hold of people or whatever the reason was. I guess he was trying to find someone that knew me to see if he had a number on me. And this toy maker guy somehow got the number of where I was living from the Palcos and called me and said, hey, Paco wants you to fly to Mexico to meet with him. And I was like, really? That's great. I'll be in Monterey next week. He's like, great. Let's pick a day and you know, I'll pick you up at the airport and I'll take you down Arena Mexico and you can meet Paco. So I was just thought it was the greatest thing ever. But if he said, keep it on the down low, because I don't want Elizondo to find out or whatever. Just didn't want to get around that I was kind of using Peter to pay Paul, you know, using Elizondo to fly me to Mexico so I could go meet with Paco. So I did my match because in Monterey, you would only work Friday and Sunday, I think it was, or just Sunday sometimes. So I was basically there all week long, just hanging out, which is so crazy to think about that now. But I had the match on the Sunday, and then I think the Monday, I you know, had enough money to buy a plane ticket to Mexico City because it's quite a long way from Monterrey to Mexico. Think, let's say, Detroit to, I don't know, Dallas, something along those lines. Or like, you know, Seattle to L.A. because it's northern Mexico to kind of southern Mexico, that sort of thing, middle Mexico. And I flew there, and the doll guy picked me up in his car and took me to Arena Mexico. Now, Arena Mexico is one of the most famous arenas in the world. It's a lot like Madison Square Garden or, you know, like, you know, the Budokan in Tokyo. And once again, don't forget, owned by the Luderoths, owned by Paco and his family. And it's an arena with an office attached to it, with the gym that they train. It's a big kind of one-stop shop for CMLL. And if you're a Lucha Libre fan, or a wrestling fan at all, especially the history of wrestling, you got to go to Arena Mexico at some point in time. But it's right in the middle of downtown Mexico City. So Mexico City traffic, I mean, it's the biggest city in the world. There's, you know, literally, I think 30 million people there or whatever it is. So to get down there takes a while, but to go there, I remember you show up and you open the door and you walk up a flight of stairs. I can see it in my mind right now. And there's kind of an office to the left with a foyer. And that's where the waiting room, basically, to see Paco. And Lupita was the secretary. Lupita. She was the one that you would wait there. Very cute little Mexican girl. And she didn't speak English. But she was always very friendly, very nice. So I went in there. And the doll maker basically said, you know, I'll wait for you downstairs or whatever it was. And you go up there. And like, here's this, you know, blonde, white, you know, good looking, kind of muscled up guy walks in there. So of course everyone's like, oh, who's this guy? You know, because the place is filled with wrestlers because everyone goes there to hang out. You get your booking sheet in there. What they would do is they would put the schedule up on the wall every Monday, I think it was. So it would almost be like when you were a kid and you would go look at who's going to be in your class this year, and they would have the list on the wall and everyone would gather around and, you know, you'd have to wait your turn to see who's in your class. So I remember they did that for the hockey team one time. Who made the hockey team? And they put it up on the locker and everybody's kind of hanging around waiting to see. You could see it. The tall guys see it first, obviously. So there would be the list of shows. And in Mexico, there were so many shows on a weekly basis because there were so many arenas that Paco owned. And also Paco would basically lease his guys out to other people in the area that had had arenas. So you could basically, I remember in Mexico City on a Sunday at one point in time, and this is no exaggeration, there was like 200 shows on a Sunday. And there was 30 shows that were like CMML related. So everyone's working on Sunday. And then, you know, Tuesday is Arena Coliseo and Wednesday is Pachuca and Thursday is Acapulco and Friday is Arena Mexico and Saturday is Arena Coliseo and Sunday is Arena Mexico or Guadalajara. And then you would just go every week and you would be working on one of those shows. So so the guys were always hanging around in there. So when I went in there, of course, they're looking at me, who is this guy? And I go in there and sit down to meet Paco Alonso. Okay, as we continue on with the story of Jericho and Paco Alonso and CMLL, I finally go and sit there in that office as I take a quick drink here. It's not easy talking for an hour straight. And I finally get invited into the office. Paco will see you now. I go inside. Now, you got to remember, in this arena, Mexico, hardly anybody spoke English. It just wasn't the way it was at that time. It might not even be that way now. And even Lupita just spoke very nominal, you know, menial English. And I walked into Paco's office, and here's this guy sitting behind a desk. Didn't look Mexican at all. If you expect a Mexican look, glasses, kind of thinning hair, a nice trim beard, and not a suit and tie as you might expect a boss to be wearing, just kind of a collared shirt and, you know, dress pants or whatever. And hello, Chris, Paco Alonso, perfect English with a hint of an accent. Hello, Chris, Paco Alonso, nice to meet you. How are you? Type of a thing. Wow. Like, this guy was educated. You could tell he was educated and he was smart and he was super friendly. And he's the type of guy that, you know, I like this guy right off the bat. And for promoters, especially at the time, I mean, I knew a lot of promoters and that, you know, they're trying to just rip you off and kind of dicks or whatever. But I'll say this about Paco. He's one of my three favorite bosses I've ever had in my career. One is Paco, two is Genshiro Tenryu from WAR, and three is Vince McMahon. Other bosses are great. I mean, obviously, I just started with AEW, so Tony Khan is a great boss. I've only been working there for a short time. But over the pantheon of my career, those are the three guys that really stood out as changing my career for the better and making me a better performer and making me into a legit headlining star. And Paco, right off the bat, obviously, he said, I saw your match with Black Magic. It was an excellent match. I want to have you come work with me here. And it was like, that's it? Like, it's that easy? And he's like, yeah, that's that easy. And I said, well, I'm working for Elizondo for the next, you know, whatever it was, the next 3 weeks or whatever. And he said, fine, when it's done, go home, you know, kind of clear your mind, come back and see me, and we'll get started. So it was that quick and that easy. And then I remember saying to him, what do you want my name to be? Because I said, you know, I kind of want to be Lionheart. And he's like, I want you to be Corazón de León, which is Heart of a Lion, a.k.a. Lionheart in Spanish. And at first, I remember kind of not liking that too much. It was kind of weird because I was like, really? Because you have Blue Demon, who's a Mexican guy with an English name. You got Silver King, who's another Mexican guy with an English name. And now you're taking the Canadian guy and giving him a Spanish name. He's like, no, that's what we want to do. It'll ingratiate you better with our fans. And I actually don't remember him even giving much of an explanation. Just said, your name is Corazón de León. I really like it. And I would like you to be that. And I was like, okay, that's fine. Sure. Sounds good. And I remember for a quick second, because I didn't wear a mask in Monterrey. I never wore a mask. But I said, do you want me to wear a mask? He said, absolutely not. Why would we cover your face? The girls are going to love your face. And there's no way we're covering it up. And that was basically the extent of the first talks that I had with him. And when I went and got my commitments done with Elizondo and came back, I remember I was walking to meet up with him. And that's when we were going to talk about, you know, where am I going to stay and all this stuff. And I saw it happen just out of nowhere. I happened to run into Black Magic. And he said, as I was walking to meet Paco, he said, everything cool? Yeah, it's very cool. And he's like, I'm glad you're here. When he asks you where you're going to stay or starts talking about where you're going to stay, tell him you want to stay at the Plaza Madrid. Don't let them put you at the Matamoros or whatever the other hotel is. I can't remember the exact one. I think Matamoros is actually a town in near Mexico City. And he said, make sure you ask him to put you at the Plaza Madrid in a corner room. And I was like, okay. So I went in and I remember we talked about where I was going to stay. And I said, I'd like to stay at the Plaza Madrid, which was the much nicer hotel. It's where Black Magic stayed and Art Barr and Eddie Guerrero and then all those guys. King Haku was there and all that sort of stuff. So yeah, and he put me in there. No problems, no questions asked. And I can't remember what my guarantee was. I think my guarantee was a minimum of four matches. I believe it was for whatever the peso level that would give me $1,000 a week. So let's say 3,000 pesos. At the time, the exchange rate was 3 pesos for a dollar, I think. So if you made 3,000 pesos, you would get $1,000, whatever that math adds up to be. I think it was $3.15 per peso or 3.15 pesos per dollars, whichever one it is. And he said for a minimum of four matches. You'd probably work more, depending how hot you get, but I want to use you for four matches every, usually Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Those are our big days. And I think Tuesday, which was one of the shows, he said, those are the days you're going to work. And the other days you'll be off and we'll put you at the Plaza Madrid. He said, and you can stay here as long as you want. If you want to go home, just tell me, I'll book you off. If you want to go home for a week or a month or whatever. He said, I want you to be here as much as you possibly can, because that way we can really build you. But he said, we have so many guys here, so many stars and so many shows. If you leave, it's not going to be a big deal. Just kind of keep me in the loop. And that was it. And he was basically like, I have some real big plans for you. And here's kind of where you're going to start. And I remember my first night was in Arena Coliseo, and it was the semi-main event and a six man. And that was it, off and running in Mexico City. He also said to me, I'm going to put you with Hector Guerrero. And at first I was like, how do you mean? Like as a tag team? He's like, no, I'm going to put Hector with you to show you around, to show you the ropes, because you don't speak Spanish. You've never been here. Hector's going to kind of be your mentor, you know, and help you out. And basically I had never met Hector. I think Paco might have even brought him into the meeting or whatever it was. But he had told Paco had told Hector, I want you to take care of this kid and kind of show him the ropes and mentor him and make sure he gets from point A to point B. And if he has any questions, he's coming to you. So I'll never forget Hector for that as well, or for Paco for being smart enough to put me with Hector Guerrero, because Hector was such a very, very good at helping me get around. And now when I say help me get around, you're talking about going, you're not just working in Mexico City, which is fine. I can get in a taxi and go anywhere. When you're working in Matamoros or you're working in Pachuca or Puebla or Toluca or any of these places that we used to go to, there's no team bus taking you there. At least there wasn't at the time. I don't have a car. You got to get there by bus. How's that for paying your dues in the business, guys? The guys that work at NXT and get pissed off because they don't get a push or whatever it is, and they're making, you know, $2,000 a week to train and hang out. We had to take a bus, and I'm talking a Greyhound bus. So somebody had to show me to go to the bus terminal, and here's what kind of buses you take. There was one specific bus line. I can't remember what it was. It was called like EDM or ETA or something, where make sure you can take these buses because they kind of have like a first class bus seat and they're a little bit more expensive, but it's worth it. And by a little bit more expensive, rather than paying, you know, 40 pesos, you pay 60. Like, it's not that much of a big deal. So you go there and you go to the bus station, and Hector would say, okay, you have to buy your ticket and make sure it's on EDM bus, and you need to leave at this time, and then you're going to get into Toluca, and you take your taxi to the arena, and you do your match, and then the taxi after back to the bus station to get on the bus to drive to back to Mexico City, because usually a hub out of Mexico City. Now, you might think, well, how hard can that be? Well, try doing it in a foreign country. No cell phone, no nothing, you know, and no Spanish, basically. And so by Paco putting me with Hector, it really helped me out a lot. And I remember they would always ask my name for the bus ticket, and I'd say, you know, Chris Irvin, to be okay, Chris Irvin, Chris Beinbein, Chris Burbing. Finally, I would just say, when they asked me what my name was, I would just say Jose Sanchez. And they would kind of look at me weird and put Jose Sanchez on the ticket, and that way I didn't have to worry about it, just get in and get out. But you know, so Paco also would show up every week, every Friday at Arena Mexico, which is the big show every week. It'd be like having like a residency at MSG or something like that, where you're actually working there every single week. And Paco would be there. A lot of times Paco would show up with a little bit of a buzz on, like to have some drinks for the big show on a Friday. And he also had one of his eyes was, I don't know if he had a glass eye or something was wrong with one of his eyes. And behind his back, the guys would call him Blinky. The English guy, Blinky's here tonight. He's pretty torched up. So Paco would show up there and you know, be a little bit loaded. And sometimes he'd be super loaded, which is kind of funny, but it's kind of Mexico, right? There's like no real rules there, but always a perfect gentleman. Conan said it best when we were talking about the passing of Paco. He was a total gentleman. Think about that. A total gentleman. What a great thing to be remembered for and to be called by the guys that worked for you. Because Paco was a gentleman. He never once, ever, get ready for the edit, never f***ed me once for the almost 2 years that I worked for him. I was there from April of 93 to April of 95, basically 2 years. And you know, going back and forth and leaving. But he was my employer for 2 years. And He never screwed me on a payoff. He never screwed me on a booking. He never screwed me on an angle. Every single penny that I was owed, I got it. Every single show that he promised, I got it. And every single thing that he told me was going to happen with whatever I was booking and doing and the matches I was having and the titles I was winning, I got it. He put me over, as a matter of fact, for the NWA middleweight championship, which had been held by Gory Guerrero, like Eddie's dad. He'd been around for that long. And he put me over at Mano Negra. And I had it for a whole year until I lost it to Ultimo Dragon, to Asahi. And he kept it on me for a year. And it was a pretty big deal to have that belt. I think I probably would have had the heavyweight championship had I been there longer and been there more. Because the last match I ever had was for the CMML world title against Apollo Dantes, which I didn't win, but it was also my last show there. And had I if I had more shows and more tours, I think I probably would have ended up working Apollo quite a bit. Also made sure to always put me in high profile matches and always made sure that I got magazine coverage, which, how do I know he made sure? Because Paco had a list of guys that were his priorities, and I was one of them. And at the time, the wrestling magazines were very, very important. They still might be, but like, there was a point in time there where you would have like 20 wrestling magazines on a newsstand. And boy, howdy, I was on, boy, howdy, where the hell did I get that from? I was on, I don't know, 20 or 30 covers over the years. There was a point in time, at one point, I was on 4 covers on the stand in 1 week. You know, so you go there, you see, like, oh my gosh, there's 4 different covers here. So you can see kind of where I'm going with this, in that there was a lot of love from Paco towards Corazon de Leon. So Paco kind of always had his ear to the ground too over what was going on. And I remember one time I was going to Acapulco and I was the champion, the NWA middleweight champion, as I told you. And I got to the airport. Now, this is in the days pre-9/11, when you could basically show up at an airport 15 minutes before your flight and just walk on. The security was really lax and no one really cared or whatever. And I was a little bit late for the flight because the traffic was bad. I got to the security line and I went to the front and the guy was kind of being a dick to me. I think a little of that is because a lot of times when they would see gringos, you know, white guys, they might be a little bit of, there's a lot of bravado there, shall we say. And when I got to the front of the line and went through the security, the guy saw that I had a title because you always carry your championship title. That's my Vince McMahon schooling. Championship titles, blat pal. They're not belts. Belts is something you buy at JCPenney's to hold up your pants. So championship title, aka belt. When I had the belt, he saw that it was in my bag. He took it out. He's like, oh, look at this. And of course, just to show it to everybody. And I'm like, I got to go. My flight leaves in 10 minutes. And something that I said, the way I said it, pissed him off. Because then he started, like, you know, unscrewing the tube of the toothpaste and, you know, like squishing it out a bit to see if it had, you know, like bomb toothpaste in there or whatever the hell it was. And I started getting mad. And I'm like, I got to go. And the guy started getting a little bit cheeky with me. So I got kind of in his face. Then another guard put their arm on me. I turned around and shoved the guard. And the guard kind of stumbled and fell down. And I turned around. It was a girl. It was a woman guard. So then all hell broke loose. And everybody's kind of surrounding me and yelling and screaming. And I hear this from behind me. Hey, what's the problem? Hey, you leave my friend alone. And it was King Haku, one of the toughest humans of all time. Not just in wrestling, in real life. Ask any guy who the toughest guy in wrestling is, they'll all say Haku. So Haku, I look and he's running down the concourse. Now, he's about 320 at the time, 6'2", just a beast, like a rhino running down there. And he's like, hey, leave my friend alone. So we're gathered around, these guys are gathered around us like 2 gunslingers with 3, 4, 5, 6, you know, security airport cops gathered around us. And they're kind of coming closer and closer and closer. And Tonga picked one of them up, kind of like Darth Vader in Star Wars, where he picks the guy off the ground by like his neck. Well, Tonga picked him up by his shoulder type of a thing. And then they pull the guns out. And then suddenly, you know, we've got guns pulled on us. And, you know, party's over. So we have to go to airport jail. Do you guys know there's such thing as airport jail? You ever heard of that? I have, because I've been in the one in Mexico City. And him and I sat there for, I don't know, hour. Felt like 10 hours. It could have been 3 minutes, but it felt like a long time because we don't know what's going to happen to us. And finally, a guy comes in, another very eloquently dressed guy, speaks really good English. And he's like, basically, you know, I don't know what happened. I'm sure there's a little bit of a brouhaha. I think you guys need to put together a little tip for our airport security guards, and we'll let you out of here. AKA, give me some money, motherfuckers, and I'll let you out. So I think we pulled our money together. We had about $300 or whatever, and we gave it to the gentleman, the general manager. And he's like, I'll make sure to give this to our airport staff. I'm like, yeah, I'm sure you did. He lets us go. We take a later flight to Acapulco. You know, craziness ensues. There's a whole other story that goes along with that. But bottom line is it was a crazy, crazy night. And when I got back to the office, A couple days later, Paco goes, oh, if it isn't the king of the airport, how is the airport? Good security in Mexico City Airport. And I thought, like, am I going to get in trouble for this? But it was much more like the Wild Wild West back then, where guys were expected to be crazy. And Paco just kind of kept an eye on everything. And obviously someone had told him about it and he knew about it. And he was just giving me a little bit. It's a very Vince thing to do. Just giving a little bit of knowledge to let me know. I know what you did last summer. You know, I know what you did. So all good. But you might want to, you know, tone it down a bit. King of the airport. But he was like that whenever I had issues. I remember one time I had a big problem with Vampiro that I don't have to get into. And he basically just sat me down and said, what's the problem? I told him this, and my problem was this guy's this and this guy's that. He said this, he did that. And I remember he just said Vampiro's name was Ian, also known as Billy. It's like Raccoon. Her name was McGill, but she called herself Lil, but everyone knew her as Nancy. Yeah, his name is Billy, but they call him Vamp, but everyone knew him as Ian, whatever. And he just said, Ian is Ian. Please don't ever get too excited. Just always remember Ian is Ian, no matter what he says and does. He is this and he does this and he says this. And basically Paco just kind of diffused the situation, which was very smart for a boss to do. And once again, a very Vince thing to do, which is why I compare the two so much, because they both ran this family, you know, this family business with an iron hand, but not like an asshole. Just as a very smart, educated boss that you could respect and that you could believe in. And like I said, no matter what he said or did, it would come true. He would follow through with that. So, you know, and that was it. I would come and go every few months. I think the longest stint I had in Mexico was 10 weeks. I left to go to Germany for 6 weeks at one point and going to Japan back and forth when Asahi brought me to WAR. And I remember I was living in a one-bedroom apartment in Vancouver with two other dudes, Lenny and Lonnie Olson, good guys. And Lenny Olson was Dr. Luther in Japan and in Canadian and Pacific Northwest Indies. But we lived together, and I was like, my goal, I was basically living there, I say that, quote unquote, because I just needed a place to basically throw the few belongings that I had and a place to get mail. Because I was on the road so much. And I remember at one point I said, I just want to see how long I can stay on the road for. Because I got a full-time job in Mexico. I'm working every tour that WAR does, which is usually 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off. And I think I just bounced back and forth between Mexico and Japan for like 6 months without going to the States. To the point, I remember my birthday, I think 1994, my birthday was like 36 hours long because I was flying from Japan to Mexico and with the time difference and change, whatever it was. Or maybe it was the other way around. But Paco was cool with it. I remember I would come in and say, Paco, I'm going to be gone from these days to these days, and I'll be here from these days to these days. He's like, great, fine. And he kept that title on me for a year. And I still continued to work there. I did the stint I had in Smoky Mountain Wrestling. When that ended, I went back to work for Paco. And the only problem with me in Mexico, what really changed it for me, the reason why I stopped working there was not because of anything Paco did or didn't do. There was two circumstances. One, Art Barr passed away, and he was such a huge part of my Mexican experience. He was such a great guy. We're going to do a podcast about Art very soon here, Dave Meltzer and myself. When he passed away, the whole vibe of Mexico changed for me. It wasn't quite as fun without Art there, and I grew up a lot because Art was the first friend that I had that died. Not a family member or a grandparent. The first guy that I knew as a guy was Art Barr. That died was Art Barr. So when that happened, it really threw me for a loop. And then from a personal standpoint, that was the reason. From a financial standpoint, I remember I used to get, once again, I would go get my check. Check was always on time. It was always exactly what it was supposed to be. You go to Arena Mexico and get your check. It's funny. Here's another great Paco story. Guys would always wait for Paco. If they got a payoff they didn't like, they would go wait for Paco. And you'd have a lineup sometimes, especially on paydays, where people would be waiting to talk to Paco. And they knew Paco was in the office. And then after a couple hours, Lupita would say, I'm sorry, Paco's gone. They say, how could he be gone? I saw him go in there. She's like, no, he left. I know he's in there. I'm sorry, he's gone. And lo and behold, you know, if you opened the door, he wouldn't be there. Found out later that he had a secret staircase that would take him straight to the parking lot of Arena Mexico from that office. So if he went in the door, he could pull some James Bond type shit and, like, you know, turn a bookcase into a staircase and walk down and escape from all the guys that were pissed off about their payoffs and say, I'll, you know, I'll deal with it later. But I never had that problem. Like I said, he always paid me what I expected to make. And if I did more shows, I remember one week I did 8 shows in a week. One week I did 10 shows in a week. Other weeks I did 4. The 10 shows in a week is because I did my 4 normal shows. I did 4 matches on a Saturday and 2 on a Sunday. So it was 4 matches on a Saturday, 2 matches on a Sunday, and then Tuesday, Friday, and maybe there's a Wednesday in there or something like that. But think about that. 4 matches on a Saturday. I worked a match at like 11 o'clock at a flea market. I did a 2 o'clock matinee at Arena something or other. I did an 8 o'clock show. And then I did a late night like show at like 10 o'clock where it was so Bush League. They had to use, it was outside in a parking lot where they used, something happened to the lights and they had to use people's headlights from their cars and trucks to illuminate the ring. So there you go. That was one of the offshoot shows. I'm sure Paco made more money off me on that show than I actually got for the check. But I would get my check and I would go cash it and I'd get pesos. Then I would always go to one of those money exchanging shops where you would see what the exchange rate was. And like I said, it was always 3.15 to the dollar. So like I said, if I walked in there with 3,000 pesos, I'd walk out with $1,000. One day I show up and the rate is at 7. I'm like, what? Yesterday it was 3.15 and it's 7? This place sucks. I'm going to another place. Another place, 7. Another place, 7. Another place, 7. I'm like, what the hell happened? Found out that there was a new president came in there or whatever it was. The exchange rate instantly, overnight, doubled plus or was half plus, whatever. So now if I had 3,000 pesos... before, that would give me $1,000. Now, 3,000 divided by 7 instead of divided by, you know, 1 would be 150. 3,000 divided by, I'm not exactly much of a... Point being that it would now take 7,000 pesos to make that $1,000. The 3,000 pesos that used to be $1,000 was now basically, you know, $300 or $350, that sort of a thing. And I couldn't believe it. I didn't know what to do. And I went to talk to Paco and he said, listen, like, you don't, it's, the reason why your money went down is nothing that you did or nothing that I did. It's the exchange. So I can't pay you $1,000 American a week anymore because my revenue isn't going up. My revenue remains the same. So if, you know, if I paid you 3,000 before and that was $1,000 and now I'm paying you 3,000, it's $420. It's not me that's causing the problem. It's the exchange. I mean, there's nothing I can do. And I basically had to just eat the fact that my salary was just basically cut, you know, over half by circumstances that were not my fault or Paco's fault. And that's when, I knew that it was time that I had to go. I mean, I couldn't afford to work there anymore, being used to the level that I had. And think about this, like once again, being a cover, you know, a cover boy, so to speak, a literal teenage heartthrob. I remember leaving Arena Mexico and just being mobbed by chicks, like literally mobbed. I'm not even, this is not an exaggeration. It's like Chrisomania, like Beatlemania with girls. They always had this really bright red lipstick. So when they kissed you on the cheek as you're trying to get away, it would stain and it would be there for like a week. And you'd sit there with a face cloth, just rubbing at it, trying to get it off. And you know, it took a while to get it off. But so I was a main event star. I was, you know, a cover model and getting a couple side gigs with, you know, commercials and comic books and that sort of thing. I was making at some points, $2,000 a week, which for a 22, 23-year-old kid whose expenses are paid, I'd have to pay for any of my trans because you would turn that your receipts in and get your expenses paid for the bus travel and all that stuff. My hotel was paid. I would have to pay my flight there and back. But if I'm staying there for 10 weeks, what's a flight going to cost? $1,000 every couple months or every 3 months or whatever? So you're looking at $2,000 a week or $1,500 a week. Like I said, that $1,000 was my minimum. I always work more than four shows a week, or very, very rarely only work four shows a week. So you would be making some really good money. Now, I would go home at some point. I mean, you know, there's that rule when you fly across a border and you fill out your customs form, and it says, do you have any cash over $10,000? If you do, you have to claim it. Well, the one time I was there for 10 weeks when I was making $2,000 a week, I mean, dude, I had like $17,000, $18,000. I had to hide that. I had to hide it. I wasn't going to claim it and have to pay taxes. So I hid, you know, imagine this 23-year-old kid flying home from Mexico to Calgary, going through LA with $17,000 cash on him. I'm lucky I didn't get rolled. You kidding me? But that's all because of the push that I got in Mexico, which was a direct result of Paco. Once again, too, when I mentioned working for Tenru and WAR, that was a direct result of Paco helping me. Because one of the things I asked him, I said, Paco, I really want to go to Japan. He said, well, we have connections with New Japan. We have connections with WAR. I'll make sure you go. Now, obviously, it was probably not a hard sell, especially with Asahi, who saw me working in Mexico. And probably when Paco said, can you take him? He went, yeah, no problem. I was probably going to ask him anyways or whatever it was. But Paco really helped me out. That's a funny story too. That's where I met Jado and Gato, was when they worked for Paco and they were a tag team. You know, I remember one point in time, none of us had any money, but I had more money than they did. And I remember I bought them a hot dog one time for lunch because they had no money. And we went to a restaurant. They wanted the hot dog, by the way. I didn't say, here's a hot dog. I said, I'll buy you whatever you want. They said, we'll take two hot dogs. That's it. You don't want like a steak sandwich or a fruit salad, or this is high class cuisine here at the Denny's of Mexico. But that was also another lifelong relationship that I got from meeting Paco. So yeah, when I left, it was all under good terms. I never worked another match in Mexico again until I worked one match for AAA in Tijuana in about 95 or 96 when I was down there and Conan kind of had me come down and work a show for him. And I felt a little bit weird. I felt almost like a traitor. Like, I should call Paco and tell him I'm working this show. And it was a shitty little show and nobody cared anyways. But I just remember thinking, like, feeling a little bit like a traitor, you know? So that was it. I never went back to Mexico until probably 2005, maybe, with WWE. And one of the times I went there, I went with Marty Rubalcaba. Marty Elias was the referee, and I said, you want to go see Arena Mexico? And took him down to Arena Mexico, and here we are in, let's say, 2008. Just throw that date out there, where I hadn't been there since 1995. 13 years later, I walk in there, go up to the office. First person I see is Lupita. She's still working for Paco. Spoke a little bit better English, but not much. My Spanish was a little better, too. But that's another thing, too. I spoke really good Spanish when I worked for Paco. Because when you live in Mexico City and work there, you need to know how to speak Spanish. And I was probably, I'd say, about 70% Spanish speaking. And the slang and all that sort of stuff. But once again, just these cool little things that I learned as a direct result of working for Paco Alonso. But I went to see him. Lupita was there. I went into his office and it was like a day hadn't passed. Still looked the same. Had a little bit more of a beard. Chris, good to see you. So excited for your success. And thank you so much for all you did. And friendly guy. And he gave me his card. I've moved a couple times since, so I don't have it anymore. But, and I'm sure we took a picture, but I don't think I have it. That was, you know, four or five phones ago. And I don't think there was pre-Instagram. But I remember just telling him, hey, thank you for all that you did for me. And thank you for giving me the opportunity. And I just remember just feeling really good about seeing Paco again and kind of letting him know, like, thanks for all that you did. And it's one of those things that in life, a lot of times, a promoter called Bob Puppets just passed away recently. That was the guy who gave me my first match, October 2nd, 1990. And he died of cancer. And I didn't even know he was sick, because I would have loved to have called him and said, you know, thanks for the opportunity, Bob. And thanks for putting me on your show when you didn't have to. And that's the same thing I want to say to Paco. Thanks to Paco Alonso for giving me an opportunity and making me into a legitimate star. The first time I was ever a star, a main event star, a money-making star. And those are things that you learn that you never forget. Because once you become a main event star in one place, 9 out of 10 times you can become a main event star in another place. And another place. And another place. And another place. Because that's how you learn how to be a top guy. And that's one thing I'm very happy about my career. I didn't make it to the WWE in 9 years. I made it in Mexico and Japan, in Germany, in Canada, in ECW, in Smoky Mountain, in WCW. Had I not had some of those skills, I might not have made it as big as I did in WWE when I finally got it rolling. But that all started with Paco. The first time I was ever on TV was Paco Alonso. The first time I was on the cover of a magazine was Paco Alonso. The first time I was ever on a talk show that meant something was Paco Alonso. All of those things, championship matches and ring music and pictures with rock stars and models. And, you know, it was a different world, and it's hard to explain because it's not all documented on computers like it is now. But at that point in time, I was, you know, Nick Jonas of Mexico. Legit nationwide teenage heartthrob. And Paco knew it. And that's why I say it's so important now for us, like AEW, to have Jungle Boy, a 23-year-old kid. You need those young kids for the young girls and the young guys to be able to follow as a role model, as somebody you want to be. Paco saw this 22-year-old kid, this 23-year-old kid, and said, I can make a star out of him. Was my work great at the time? No, but there was enough there that he put me with Negro Casas, and he put me with El Dandy, and he put me with Ace, and he put me with Bestia Salvaje, and Sangre Chicana, and Silver King, and Tejano, and Dr. Wagner Jr., and Emilio Charles. These names might not mean anything to you, but if you know about Lucha Libre, these guys were fucking great. Atlantis. And they didn't treat me like a 22-year-old foreigner. They treated me like a legit asset that could help them look better and could make their job better. They were true pros because they worked for a total gentleman. Thank you, Conan, whose name was Paco Alonso. And I'm glad I got the chance to thank him. And do I feel a little weird that I posted a video on Instagram that shows me crying and 250,000 people watched it? A little bit, but it's real. I don't cry a lot. I'm not much of a crier, but that one hit me. I hadn't thought about Paco Alonso in a while, but whenever I think about him, I always say the same thing. One of the best bosses I ever had. And to hear that he passed away really hit me, man, because it sucks. And I'm really interested to see what's going to happen with CMLL, because that guy ran it the same way that I'm interested to see what's going to happen with Vince when he passes away, which will probably be in 50 years. But anyways, Paco Alonso, great guy. And thank you so much for everything that you did and for showing me what potential I had to become a legit star in this business. Gracias, señor. All right. Thank you guys for listening. And I know it's kind of a last minute thing, but I really wanted to do this and I appreciate it. And we'll get to our Nicky Novak movie preview next week on Friday. We got Jack Slade coming back with a great preview for Extreme Rules. But in the meantime, and in between time, I want you to come with us on Chris Jericho's Rock and Wrestling Rager at C Part 2, January 20th, 2020. We're nearly sold out. We're 92% sold out, less than 90 cabins left. You can see it if you've been watching the ads and seeing how we're doing things here. Every single day, we're selling more cabins. I do not want you to miss this. It's going to be such a great time. It's going to be the vacation of a lifetime. AEW Wrestling live on board. Fozzy live on board. Ric Flair. What else do you get a chance to spend a week with Ric Flair? Are you kidding me? Scott Hall, Kevin Nash, X-Pac. Jake the Snake Roberts, Charmel, Booker T, MVP, Brad Williams is the host. He's hilarious. Vicky Guerrero is going to be there. Shawl, Eddie's daughter, is going to be there with the Vaudettes. Her burlesque troupe is going through the roof. I'm so excited for you to see them. Jack Slade, Keeper of the Ice, Red Cup Jeff. Teddy Irvin's going to be there telling some great stories on Keeping It 100, the third anniversary show. If you haven't heard that, go check it out. Conan's show, still killing it. And Teddy Irvin is a great guest. Kickaxe, Jared James Nichols, Light the Torch, Farewell to Fear, Rubik's Cube, Killer Queen, Dave Spivak Project, all rocking the ship. So much fun. DDP is doing some great yoga. Beyond the Darkness, I talked to Dave Schrader today. He's got something very cool. They're going to tell campfire ghost stories with a fake fire and hot chocolate, and it's just going to be a blast. So I really want you guys to be there. Go to ChrisJerichoCruise.com. Pick up one of the remaining cabins. I was looking today. There's still six levels of cabins left. 16 of them are sold out, but the ones that are left, you still got great cabins. Every cabin on this is awesome. So please come join us on that. And come join us in Mansfield, Ohio, this Friday, Fozzy Incarceration with Shinedown, Skillet, and Fozzy. And then Nickelback, doing a couple dates with them, August 22nd and 24th, Uncasville, Connecticut, Atlantic City, New Jersey. Unleashed in the West with Fozzy in September. We're opening for Iron Maiden in Los Angeles on September 14th at the Bank of California Stadium. So we decided to book a whole tour around it. Denver, September 5. Colorado Springs, September 6. September 7th, Grand Junction, Colorado. Salt Lake City on the 8th. Crystal Bay, Nevada on the 11th. San Francisco on the 12th. 13th, Sacramento. 14, LA with Iron Maiden. 15, Counts Famped in Las Vegas. 18 in San Diego. 19 in Tempe, Arizona. 20 in Tucson, Arizona. El Paso on the 21st. 25th, Dallas, Texas. 26th, Houston, Texas. We got Sons of Texas joining us for the Texas shows. September 27th, Hattiesburg at Brewski's. Atlanta, Georgia, 28th at the Masquerade. Come join us. Jared James Nichols opening all the shows. And come check out our VIP meet and greet, FozzyRock.com, for all info on the meet and greet, great meet and greet that we do, and all the shows themselves. All right, we're looking forward to Friday. Jack Slade returns for the band. The Extreme Rules preview WWE does not want you to hear. It's going to have a lot of fun. We'll get ridiculous as always. Until then, stay hard, stay hungry. Peace, love, and hugs. And a big yeah, boy. Muchas gracias, Senor Paco Alonso. We love you, man. And we'll see you very soon on the other side. Corazón de León. All right. Oh, yeah.